here in these new work drafts. So some of the comments that you may have had tonight may have already been covered in this work draft. And the draft that just got it to us late this afternoon, that's why we didn't have it for you. 581 deals specifically with delivery of state services within the unorganized borough and how the state will use these unorganized borough boundaries for data collection, programming, and cost analysis purposes. And I know Bob had some very specific comments on that bill also on Monday, so he might want to check and or testify again as to your concerns, and then we will make sure that they have been addressed in these committee substitutes.
Thank you. It really is we'll take testimony, but it's informal for either for you to make statements or to get into some kind of dialogue on the bills. That's we're here because you're here. So who'd like to be first to be here? Oh, this is too much. Yes.
First, before we're here, we got an introduction.
Oh, by all means. Go ahead, Pat.
Oh, Pat Carney, state representative from Wausau.
I'm Bill Parker. I'm from Anchorage.
And I'm Arla Sturzaluski from Anchorage.
Representative Margaret Branson from District 5, Cordova, et cetera.
Representative Patrick O'Connell from the Western Kenai Peninsula. Kenai, Soldotna, Homer, Soldovia.
English Bay.
English Bay.
English Bay.
You finished?
I'm finished.
Fred Jara from Kodiak.
And that was Marjorie Gorsuch, who is staff to Representative Parker.
And the brains of the outfit.
And the brains of the outfit. And true. And Twyla Hartsock, who is my staff. Well, how about it? Bob?
Now, let's not just have your normal testimony. Let's really do it up big.
Really get down to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Close the door so we can get down to it, is that it?
I appreciate that this is an informal workshop or discussion because we're in the stage of having gone through 3 days of dealing with the bills, talking about them, talking about local government issues, talking about how a second-class city is formed, just a wide variety of concerns. Unlike several of the other workshops of the Citizens Participation Conference, we didn't come with a previously established structure. There was no Alaska Regional Energy Association, no Rural Alaska Resources Association like the Subsistence Department has had ongoing for over a year now. So we were just getting together and getting organized. The recommendations that we came up with will be presented to the full Citizens Participation Conference tomorrow morning and will be voted up or down or amended. And then at that point will be put into the presentation for the luncheon. It's tomorrow at 12:30 to legislators. So these are the preliminary views of the local government workshop or of individuals as they indicate, not any sort of Citizens Participation Conference recommendations. The CS for House Bill 580 was, of course, the major topic of discussion of the workshop. Most of the recommendations were fashioned around amendments to that. And if all of these amendments were adopted, I think we could be comfortable with passage of the bill. They're rather far-reaching. I wish we had our little walk charts.
There.
That's where most of the recommendations are. The as I'm sure you've heard in the teleconferences and in the interim hearings, there's a real concern still that this remain a voluntary process and that the bill will be explicit to that effect. It's not a mandatory borough act, but anything that can be done to make it just crystal clear to everyone that it's, I don't know if you can have negative statements of purpose or not, but that it's not the intent of the legislature that this in any way promote the formation of mandatory boroughs would be the kind of language I think we'd be comfortable with. I've heard again and again that that's not the intent of this, but in reading the bill, it looks voluntary. The kind of thing we're talking about is right in the title, say line 9, voluntary adoption of home rule boroughs. That may seem redundant to add voluntary there. In line 7, or 6 and 7, establishing unorganized boroughs, have a voluntary establishment of unorganized, just overkill the fact that it is voluntary because people are still...
There, I think that's, you know, in conversation with people coming in, I think it's a valid comment, and no matter how many times you say it, I think that fear is there, and I think that's worth attention.
I think one of the toughest points that we dealt with was whether or not drawing boundaries promotes anyone that would have a design to form mandatory boroughs or not. And reluctantly, the sense was that if it's going to happen, if it has the votes, it's a bad thing, but we ought to address that on its merits, not on the basis of whether this boundary drawing...
Let me ask you a question on that whole thing, because I think that's a key one, because it's come up before. Does anybody really feel that there would be the votes in the legislature to do it? I just think it's, oh gosh, I don't. Absolutely foreign. Well, I wonder. I guess people have that fear that maybe they will.
Huh? It happened before. And
yeah.
We're looking at reapportionment also.
Yeah.
1982. And this would not bind them to mm-hmm. they could undo it at that point.
Sure.
But we'd like to have the clear expression that it was intended to be a voluntary process, and that if some borough, unorganized boroughs elected to stay that way, that we'd have something to go back into the law and say, look, this was anticipated, this was expected, and it's okay, and don't try and push us along on this process. The boundary drawing exercise was the next area of concern. The REAAs seemed appropriate as a starting point for drawing the boundaries.
What page are we on? Did you get into a specific here? Maybe we can...
The on page 2, starting with line 5, establishment of unorganized boroughs. And with the permission of the chair, I'd encourage and just interrupt and correct me in a way that seems like it doesn't reflect what we're talking about.
I'm going to go out of time, we'll just contradict you later.
Okay.
I'll fix it.
The 120 days is not nearly long enough, we felt. Even though the process was done with extensive hearings several years ago for SB 35, if this thing passes in early summer, that 120 days could be expired before the summer's over, and that's not necessarily a very good time for hearings. So we'd like to see that at least doubled. And my understanding of the hearing process was that if the REAA boundaries are used, that no hearings are required whatsoever. The only case in which hearings would be required is if the commissioner wishes to use something other than the REAA boundaries. We felt that because of the kind of concerns about the voluntary process, that hearings are highly desirable, that they ought to happen, regardless of whether the REAA boundaries are being used or not, so that someone could go along and explain to people what this bill is, that it is voluntary, and just continue that education process about what the contents of the bill are. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't simply be a boundary drawing hearing. It would be to get into the merits of what is the process under this bill. We felt very strongly that the boundaries should be provisional for the duration of the planning exercise laid out on page 3. And I'm working from the work draft 7657. I'm not sure if the page numbers or the lines have changed. If any of these...
Almost the same.
Okay. If any of these don't seem to make sense, that may be why. We felt the boundaries should be provisional, recognizing that the planning process has to have some kind of boundaries to start with.
Yeah.
We felt that the boundaries should not be set until the planning process determined that those boundaries were appropriate. And it's sort of an interactive process. Start with the boundaries declared as provisional, have the planning process occur. One of the required elements in the study on page 4, starting with line 5, which lists the required elements of the study, we recommend adding an element there which would examine the appropriateness of the provisional boundaries as one of the required elements in the study.
One point I'd like to bring up, Bob, we have written into 581, you know, as you know, we pulled out the part to dealing with the administration, and we need to start for their purposes also to have lines which are administrative, but they're concurrent. If we did that, I suppose we could do that if we would then have an adjustment in that bill too. I was just, you know, trying to think how that would go. We're starting them off on a process because it's that chicken and egg thing. You've got to have those lines in there. So whatever we do, you know, has to be in both bills.
Certainly the bills.
But you're talking. Let's use Calista here for an example. If we've got let's say that two REAAs are what it comes out. I haven't the foggiest idea. But then they decide, well, we want the third REAA, which has got Lyme Village in it. So then you want to, after input and local people working, to be able to adjust to take in those.
Right, and it may not be strictly along the lines of adding or subtracting an REAA. It may be a village. And the REAA boundaries were adopted primarily for educational purposes. And while there were extensive public hearings by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, the standards that were applied for REAAs back in Senate Bill 35, rather than making a statement, I'll make it a question. I'm not sure to what extent those standards reflected the constitutional standards for boroughs. And to the extent that they didn't, starting with those boundaries and making it automatic that becomes the boroughs, unless the commissioner finds that for some reason it shouldn't, after public hearings, may be a problem. And regardless, I think that on something this fundamental and this important to residents of rural Alaska, some real careful attention to the boundary drawing process and the relationship of that planning process, if it finds for whatever reason that a community really doesn't belong or would rather be in a different area, that should be considered as a factor. It's certainly not the sole factor in a decision of boundary drawing.
Well, maybe we're going to hold you up too much, but maybe a review mechanism and a matter for adjustment after that study might be an appropriate way to address it. That might be a solution.
In the contracting for the study itself,
have we got a page again on that?
Okay, the regional planning program on page 3, line 2, assistance for regional planning programs in the area as well. Page 3. Okay, it's now at the bottom of page 2, I'm sorry, on line 27. That's where I'll have to jump from bill to bill. You can cover that.
You're not going to comment?
Let me just collect my thoughts for a second. We felt that the REAA, the provisional boundaries that are established, that people from within that area should have more of a say in the conduct of that regional planning program, that as it is now, the commissioner, upon request of an interested firm, for example, could initiate the planning process. We felt that involvement of people within that unorganized borough is absolutely essential, and that in some form, the contract ought to pass through those people. And I think the language we proposed to try to do that was on page 3, line 27. After receiving the proposals for preparation of a regional planning program, the commissioner shall seek public participation in their evaluation. And then strike evaluate them.
Seek public what?
seek public participation in that, in their evaluation. And unfortunately, that language doesn't actually convey the degree of concern about involvement from that unorganized borough in the selection of a contractor. So clearly, there are going to be some cases where the actual work is going to have to be somehow subcontracted to a firm with experience.
Palmer, could you come here a minute so I can ask you a question?
But to have it as open-ended as it is, where the commissioner can initiate the regional planning program, ends up with having planning done on behalf of a group without their active involvement, and that's just a waste of money. If it's not initiated by and actively involving the participation of the residents on whose behalf the plan is being compiled, it's highly unlikely the plan would ever be adopted, and if it were, it'd probably be a bad plan. So if the kind of resources are going to be committed to this that would be needed in order to do it right, then why not involve the locals? And it's hard for me to imagine a situation where the commissioner would have to, on his own initiative, start this planning process.
Marge has got something for you.
Bob, I just wanted to clarify what the intent of this is. The intent is that the request can come from either, as on page 398, a municipality, group of municipalities, or one or more non-profit corporations, or by petition of 15% of the people living in an unorganized borough. They are the ones who may request that this study be done. Then the commissioner may contract specifically with a municipality, a group of municipalities, or one or more nonprofits. This is back on page two. In other words, the control of the contract is in the hands of the region.
We want it for the people, by the people.
You don't want it anymore.
We want it down to the lowest level possible where people are realizing their responsibilities.
Sterling Institute is a nonprofit. They might come in and request.
Who is that?
Any consulting firm or Sterling Institute or Stanford Research Center, any of those under this legislation could come in and request a contract and finding for general that borough.
Of course, that is not our intent. I wonder how it certainly isn't. You know, I mean, it's got to be the people or it'll fail. So how do we word it? Because that's really where everybody is.
In layman's language.
Well,
we had the same problem because we wanted to limit it, but without making it an absolute preference,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't get the exact language. The sense was that
It's
more than public participation, but you can't have an election. It's an unorganized borough. Right.
Jeff, do you have a brilliant idea?
Suggestion. When the Coastal Resource Service Area boards were established with the Coastal Zone Management Act, the procedure to organize as a Coastal Resource Service Area board was that process, I think, really could be adapted to this, and that is either resolutions by a majority of the villages of that region or 15% of the population who voted in the last election may petition to Lieutenant Governor to call for an organizational election. And you could do it similar to that, to call for, to ask the commissioner to contract for this planning assistance funds. And that way you are assured that it's going to come from the people. Now, what entity receives those funds is really up to the community. In our case, it was Manayoc Association that the villages decided should handle the funds, but it's sufficiently flexible enough where it can be adapted to the different things that are going on in other regions. But it ensures that the people are deciding that this is what's going to happen. This is what they want to take place.
Way to initiate the organization, I think, could be adapted to this piece of legislation to ask the commissioner for these planning assistance funds.
Well, the major thing is that you want a way to be sure that the people want the plan, that they're involved in it. That becomes the...
And that the people are comfortable with the contract is selected.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, we can't do it here, but I think you're stating that very clearly. And... two issues then, a way to be sure that the people want the plan, so you'll have some support for getting something done, and then to seek a way that the contractor or the proposals are have some input by the people to evaluate those, right?
Right.
Okay. Guess that's clear enough. All we need is a solution.
This kind of led us into the funding for the plans because of our concern that the boundaries be kept provisional until the planning process is complete. We looked at the bill that appropriated $300,000 to the Unorganized Borough Planning Fund and tried to calculate just a rough figure of what it would cost to do all of the RDAAs and came up with $1.6 million the first year. Depending on how many of them go in on that, and it's hard to say, but if the funding is not to retard the process of determining whether boroughs are appropriate or not, or the unorganized boroughs are appropriate, that's roughly the amount that we figured it would take. And that's not part of this bill, but it relates to it.
Do you mind at all if we have enough interchange so we can answer the questions when they come out? Are you comfortable with that? Because we don't want to, you know. Palmer, you prepared the fiscal note on that, and you look like you'd like to make a comment.
Well, your committee did request, or representing Parker's committee did request what did we presume might be a reasonable expectation, particularly within the 1 year following passage of this bill. We presume that $75,000 would be adequate for one study, and we presume that in the first year following passage of this bill, there would be four studies. That's where the number of 300,000 comes up, four times 75,000.
But I think in rural Alaska right now, that everybody's starting to get on the ball and realizing, you know, that planning for future development is really important. I think we could have offered
I think we're also presenting an incomplete picture because there's an essential element of this process that we've suggested that isn't covered yet. If I could defer to Spud Williams on that one to explain it.
Yeah, we went through this total bill. There's no kind of phasing into this process of going into organized boroughs. It's strictly you do the study and zap, you jump into an organized government type of system. I mean, you have that option, but there's no phase in between the study. There's no phase in between organizing or opting to either organize or remain unorganized. And you're also spending a lot of money to develop plans. When this contract is let to whoever it's let to, is going to go out there and organize basically something similar to a planning commission. Because it's going to have to be done basically on a local level. Similar to what Nana has done, similar to what the town of Chiefs has done. We've basically organized a planning type of commission. They don't have any authorities. After you spend this money, you get these plans developed. If the unorganized borough that is being studied and planned for, if they opt not to organize, it's just a white paper you're going to put on a shelf. Maybe it'll go to a few departments of the state government, but still no mechanism for local follow-through. And so what we're suggesting is that someplace in this bill, probably prior to where you state direct incorporation of home rule boroughs, that there be an intermediate step.
Where are we on that page?
Page 5.
Okay.
There's no language whatsoever that addresses the issue
mm-hmm.
of what you're going to do with the plans. You know, you've developed this planning entity within the unorganized borough. But there's nothing in here addresses what you're going to do with it if everybody just throws up in their hands and says, the plan says not to organize. So there should be some type of intermediate step. In dealing with rural Alaska, you'll find, those of you that have dealt with rural Alaska to any great extent, that you have to keep pushing the idea out there until it comes back to you, and then they say, do it. And it's a fairly long, patient process that you have to go through. And now that you've done all this work, the plans are developed, the community development plans, the management systems for government, the interrelationships of all the organizations, the state, federal, the nonprofits, village corporations, and all this is going to be studied. Now you've developed a system for information, for the state to gather all this information. You've developed a system of public participation in the planning process. No way to implement if they opt not to organize.
Okay, you know, we obviously spend an awful lot of time, and you get down to this really basic part of the problem, and that is the lack of resources, economic for jobs and so on, and also to support governments. And we looked at an in-between process, for example, which I don't know if you remember when we had the elected advisory assemblies, which gave this kind of a step of thinking that that can be an in-between until you go on at some point to an organized government. And absolutely, without question, that was thumbs down wherever we went. Part fear, again, that thing of here you are presupposing a solution before we're able to bring people along and find an answer. And there's been talk, of course, from Doyon at one time to put in some kind of a planning mechanism that's ongoing, even wanting to go so far perhaps with the service area. And of course, there are real problems, again, with piecemealing certain powers out there without having the full range of checks and balances. So I don't think it's a question of saying, hey, that's not a good idea. It's one, giving a solution before people can go out and address that kind of a problem. And maybe, you know, it's an ongoing process that's got to involve, hopefully, some legislators who care and the people out there who obviously care. And putting it into a cut-and-dried solution is not an answer either. I think that's going to cause more fear.
Well, I don't want to give you the impression I'd like to see something like that mandated in these bills, but I'd like to see the opportunity.
Do you have an idea?
Yeah. What I'd like to see in this bill is some statement that a phasing step after this planning process and this plan is developed, a phasing step where an opportunity for local unorganized boroughs to assume planning powers and responsibilities. Not mandating, but giving them the opportunity to opt for that first step of organization. Because once you've developed this plan, along with these plans is going to be community economic development, community development across the board. And then after a few years, with that type of emphasis, that type of planning, that type of local initiative, they might develop the economic base that's going to be necessary to enable them to develop those.
Well, not to get into an argument, we need to talk about this, but a number of you attended, you know, this morning on the Rural Development Council, and that's, you know, everybody's got a way they're moving ahead. But I think there's increased emphasis, and we're going to see it come out partly out of coastal district plans. We're going to see it partly come out, hopefully, if this process goes through, where people are really starting to look at themselves. Maybe there's a structure that we haven't invented yet that's a viable economic district out there. I don't know. And those are the kinds of things that maybe they will come out of the studies to look. And we've heard the consortium agreement up in your area, Chris, and I think that would be, in a sense, presumptuous to say that's the way it should go. I think there well could be intermediate steps, but I think those are the kind of things that ought to come out. Now, NANA is, region to me, is right at this critical time where they're in the second year of a three-year study, and they're learning a whole lot of things about themselves. They're going to have to make some decisions whether of a way to go ahead and a solution to just that problem that you're talking about. But it's very difficult to presuppose what that decision should be. It may be unique. It may be something that everybody can get into the act. But we sure didn't come up with that neat kind of idea that could fit for anybody. Bill, does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're a little different in interior than people along the
coast,
because
see,
we don't have the coastal zone management entity, and so we've had to go out there and basically develop our own.
If we could just cut this up into a whole bunch of little nation states, we wouldn't have this problem.
Well, like I say, if you could give the opportunity for these local areas to assume planning powers, they could continue on with what you're funding now.
Yeah.
and they could start to implement these plans. But without that opportunity, there's no way to implement what you're spending money for. It's just going to be another white paper that's going to be shelved. You know, if they don't opt to form an organized borough. So let's start to develop that expertise in government. Give them the opportunity to assume this planning authority. You've given the unorganized boroughs the opportunity to assume education. Now I'll give them the opportunity to assume planning. You're developing a government out there.
You just, you know, I don't want to get into a debate, but that's going to, I think, sink us before we start. It's just, that's moving down to create a power that I just don't see that happening.
Well, even phase that then. If that's uncomfortable, maybe give them the opportunity to at least form a formalized advisory planning commission. And once they prove themselves through some type of criteria, then let them assume the authority.
Jeff, do you have a comment?
Yeah. One of the things, and we spent quite a bit of time on this, is with these planning studies, we wanted to provide enough flexibility for each of the regions to determine how well it can work for them. The Nana region is different than Cananachi is different than Atten. And we don't want to come up with a system that says, okay, everybody's going to be the same. And what we felt through these planning studies is to provide the flexibility to design a system that was in tune with what was happening with their particular region.
And we've spent almost, we spent over $500,000 in developing this system so far.
What?
Well, real dollars, about a little over $500,000. And we'll probably spend another $250,000 before everything is completed. We spent a lot of effort in developing a planning entity out there in the RA borough. In fact, we subdivided our borough pretty much along the same lines as the REA.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. They're almost exactly the same. Just a few exceptions because of our sub-regionalization concept.
Bob?
I think providing that option would not slow down an unorganized borough that wanted to become a home rule borough. They would bypass that step and not have that election for the planning function. They'd simply have the plan done, both whether to adopt the results of the plan, elect the charter, and so forth. But it would provide an option for those regions that are not comfortable with that particular pace. It's one more check on the legitimacy of the planning instrument, whether that plan, and it gives some more flexibility and choice as to what direction it goes. It's not borough or no borough. It's both of those choices plus another choice, which is planning is still a good thing even if you're in the unorganized borough.
To show the commitment behind this concept is a lot of that money is 638-104 money. It doesn't even come through the state. It goes directly to those tribal entities and they're spending their own money that they could be doing other things with. That's the commitment that they're doing with this concept.
Yeah. Well, I think I think your points there. I think we'll have to talk about it. It's a really tough one, and it's going to get in. I'll be very frank with you. I see some problems with this legislation passing because there's a whole lot of different voices, and there's fear on the part of the urbans about the rurals and the whole thing. It's not going to be easy. If we add that element, I just don't want to see us fail before we begin. And you know, so here we're Palmer.
I just wanted to ask Bud if he's focusing in on the notion and need for planning as a major concern out there. Why, with the second-class borough concept, wouldn't that meet your planning? Education's already there. Planning, assessment, taxation, which could be assessed at whatever level of assessment you want, taxation at zero, you've got basically your planning authority.
I think if you speak to Arliss about her experiences and her travels, that the word borough is kind of a scare word out there. And the testimony that you've gotten from rural Alaska, just the word borough is a scare word because they haven't experienced any great governmental effort out there yet. They have to
it's a question of time, and play with it and practice it for a while
before they're comfortable with it.
One, the basic issue of dollars is still, you know, one to be addressed, and I sure hope we can work on that a foundation approach for basic services, so it'll make some of these things possible, because the distribution is mighty, mighty poor. Well, I think your point's there. I don't know what the accommodation. I have some concerns about it. And if you've got any more things you can give in the way of suggestions, we'd appreciate it.
I wasn't clear. Were you suggesting that the legislation in its present form is going to have real difficulty, or with this addition of that planning option?
I just think the way the legislation is, it may have its problems. Because there are lots of voices out there, and those voices are concerned, and there's a lot of kind of fears about, you know, what somebody trying to do to us. And I don't see the legislature. There are those that say, okay, we want to put a property tax on, period. That's the answer they see. So it's not, you can't assume this is the fait accompli just because it's here. And I think you ought to realize that. And I think that came through in a lot of different voices in the teleconference that we had. Do you, Bill, if I'm out of line, let me know.
No, I think you're right. In fact, somebody heard my little pitch before on this, but because Arles and I are both from Anchorage, we're sort of bashful about pushing too hard on any of this stuff. But the other alternative when you're CRA chairman is to just work with the league and make sure that your own city's covered and worry about Title 29. So we did go around, you know, this fall, and we think we've got a general picture of about how popular the idea of local government and borough government is out there. And we're just telling you that we understand that, plus we've got our troubles inside the legislature too. I mean, this is not a popular thing to do in here either. So once we understand each other on that, then the riddle is, well, I mean, isn't there something we could do? Is it, at least we could establish the common boundaries. That seemed like the least thing we could do and still do something. And Charles said, even at that, it's getting a cool reception for all kinds of reasons, some of them political and some of them, I guess, just natural.
Why do you guys think that there needs to be local?
I don't think, I'll tell you what we're responding to is people's needs to start to look at themselves, and I think that voice is there. And it's how you accomplish that. You know, how does that go about? What do you use in the way of exterior boundaries? Not everybody's coastal zone. Maybe coastal zone solves problem. We're not giving an answer, except that the Constitution does call for certain kinds of organizations, but obviously there have been political decisions made that called for districts. Now, the concern is, to kind of back up a little bit, that we could go on as we are right now. We can form, or we have formed, the REAAs. We have formed coastal districts. We've had requests to form planning and zoning districts, to form health districts, to form transportation districts. And pretty soon what you get are a whole bunch of people who can't find a way in the process, because they've got a whole bunch of districts that are all put in there together, but you don't get to really elect one. Everybody's spread thin. The activists are going to be sitting on four boards. And this is, I realize I'm exaggerating the story, but you pretty soon have a whole bunch of single-purpose districts that may overlap, that will have different people, and nobody really giving this focal place where you and everybody else that lives out there can get in and pin the responsibility and say, you so-and-so, you didn't respond to me. You know, you're elected. Now, there, I don't know if there are other methods, but I think what we're going to do, the problems out there are real. They're real for transportation, they're real for health. There's going to be a solution. Now, it's either going to be maybe toward more and more districts because the pressure is going to be so great, or maybe you're going to look at yourself and you're going to say, you know, it's time for us to get the kind of funds flowing here so we can form a government or an economic district so we can get dollars in so we can start to address these problems. So we're not coming out and telling you to have boroughs, but we have a responsibility heading those committees to try and react to some of the problems out there. Guess that's it.
You've mentioned what could be one of the solutions, and I think this is a very simple solution.
when it comes to the voting procedure and the petition, I know in our community, 70 people who govern 581 or 750 people, whatever the census will eventually turn out to be, this in a way is almost criminal to have such a low number or percent. It should be much, much higher. It should be 3/4 or 80% or even 90%. So everybody then knows their responsibility. And until we can educate them to what government is, what responsibilities are long term, oh my gosh, we're in a village, people can't flush a toilet, they can't make up their mind about a water system. And we're talking about 200 years of America in a rural section. And this is, we have to start at the bottom, work up. Maybe boroughs are not the thing for 5 or 10 years. But when they are, they should be exactly what the people want because they're educated.
Now that's why we're too writing into this. Right now, you have to go through a hoop to have
exactly.
to be able to write your charter. We're trying to make it so you can go from this unorganized area to have a charter through a home rule process so it can be adapted to some of the needs of rural Alaska. And that's one of the things that we've provided. Right now, the law pretty much says you have to be a good person and first be a first-class borough before you can go on. We've tried within the framework of the law to adjust that so it provides more flexibility.
I think that's why we're here, trying to voice.
Sure.
Slow down. Mm-hmm.
Let me, Jeff, just before you get started, you know that just even the phrases like home rule and local control, not only are they what the Constitution envisioned, but I mean, I think everybody pretty much agrees that, I mean, that's, we do have that in common, don't we? I mean,
I hope so.
Everybody thinks that the best judge of people's problems are themselves and that they should, you know, the closer home decisions are made, the more likely they're apt to reflect what's, you know, need to be done and so forth. Boroughs, Spud said, is a scare word. So, but it's the form of local government that that we have, and somebody else said this before, you know, the 11 boroughs, what, all but two, is that right, were mandatory, the Mandatory Borough Act? I think so. Only Bristol
Bay
and North Slope Borough.
Bristol, and I don't know if Sitka was.
Haynes.
Yeah.
Haynes was, okay. The North Slope Borough is the best example of what local control can mean that is not necessarily what the state would have predicted. You know? I mean, so you don't have to, I mean, it's not like we have a cookie cutter here that's going to stamp you out, you know, in the image of Anchorage or something. I mean, there's
that possibility?
I suppose there is that possibility. You'll have to decide for yourselves whether.
If that's what you want,
yeah,
I'm not so sure you do.
But when you're dealing with a small percentage of people campaigning with maybe personal or political goals, and one of these days, maybe 5 years from now, our youth is going to say, hey, look what happened. Where were we? We were ignorant. This is pretty frightening. I wouldn't want any part of it.
Well, Anchorage and Fairbanks has the same trouble with voter turnout, so it's a lot to push for voter turnout.
It's not a question of voter turnout. It's a question that the person is in a political situation where they'll gain something from it. I have seen petitions go around where people are stoned, drunk, or whatever, and sign them and not know that they have done this.
That doesn't happen just in the board.
Yeah.
Pardon?
That doesn't happen just in the bush. People sign anything.
That's
right.
I
mean, petitions are
I wonder
notorious
if
for that.
To make people aware.
Yeah. I wonder if before we get too far, because we're talking about philosophy too, if we can get down to specifics. Everybody left the spot up here. Spud, were you going to make the next comments? Because I think you've made a strong statement on your planning. Do we want to go on to specifics now? Or, do we have other specific comments?
That was my main concern, is that phase step and what you're going to do with the plan once you develop it.
Yeah.
If they don't opt to go borough, if there has to be an intermediate step to get people comfortable with operating as a government. Mm-hmm. And one of the main powers is planning. Mm-hmm. Once they develop the plan and start to implement them, they're going to be operating as basically a borough. They've got education on it, they've got planning. The next step is now that they're operating that type of a system is just to formalize the whole thing and go home rule borough.
What did anybody take a good look at 581 about the administration? Were you pleased with the separation so that we didn't get the overlap? Was that agreeable? Are you pretty happy with that? Jeff, are you going to make some comments?
Yeah, we really think that to areas that have, for whatever reasons, proven that there's a common bond. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it was the feeling of the group that the 581 is good, even though we changed 580 a little bit.
Well, let's make an assumption here now that we change 580 to reflect, sort of kind of a thing, and then there's a readjustment mechanism in there. Don't you think you'd need that same thing in 581? I mean, you wouldn't want to get out there with differing boundaries. That's the only question. Did you talk about that? Am I missing something?
Well, I think basically data collection is kind of an administrative function that's fairly easy for departments of state to flow back and forth. Yeah.
So you see it being adjusted to reflect those.
Yeah, with still provisional boundaries, it'll almost happen automatically.
Right. Also, we kind of felt that after the preliminary planning process of the, say up to 3 years, that exemption clause in 581 would be reviewed again. Mm-hmm. So that the administrative or governmental agency wouldn't be able to grandfather themselves an exemption once those preliminary boundaries were found to be made permanent. Mm-hmm.
I think you had a point, Bob.
Just kind of, I think, referring to what Spud was saying, that once the threshold problem is for the state to gather information on a regional basis, once the programming is set up to do that, I think changing the boundaries just means changing where you place some of that individual data. It shouldn't be nearly as hard as establishing the regional collection of data, and the regional programming that's required is probably the harder part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You did take a look at the responsibilities of the Division of Policy Planning. I was looking for the section that calls for them to get into this coordinative situation. Marge, where is that?
It's now back on page 7.
Yeah, I thought I had it, and then I lost it. If we could take a look at section 5.7. Ma'am, I didn't catch your name, and I should know.
Jenny.
Jenny, did you have an additional comment for me?
On that 3 years that Dave mentioned, it could happen prior to that if one saw fit. Mm-hmm. The reason for 3 years, we need a goal or a date to shoot for.
Okay. Section 2, I think, is important on that. That would be line 25, page 7, to report to the legislature by July 1, 83, alternatives and recommendations for improving coordination of programs which provide direct services to people. This is a big problem we see out there, that you can have all the data in the world, but if you haven't got your department starting to work together. That's a lot of where our problems are. Okay. Who's next?
Just
Bob?
A technical comment. It says, I guess the dependent clauses, which are not exempt under S-4417-130, but I'm not sure that any direct services are provided under those exemptions. For example, it's the administration functions and the natural resource.
Marge, can you specifically, unfortunately, Margot Waring, who...
Those which are not exempt under exemption.
I'm just wondering if there are any direct service programs which... Oh, okay. Okay, I'm getting
it backwards. One thing I should point out in this bill, this is different than the one you reviewed. We wanted the state
up there?
To do this.
Yeah, I think so.
To collect data, regardless of whether 580 passed. And the way the one that you reviewed was written, it was dependent on the passage of 580. This one says that if 580 does not pass, that the RAA boundaries will be the boundaries used, and that this process will still take place. And that is a major change.
That's in the CS, yeah.
I think that's fantastic. It's also amazing to see changes which was suggested in testimony Monday morning in a draft bill on what Wednesday evening.
Well, sometimes we move fast, too fast.
That is another issue. The paperwork that comes out of either Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Juneau, the town gets to the bush, there's sometimes as many as 10 and 15 days date difference. By the time a response comes here, I'm sure your mail is, you know, could be 11. And if you move this fast here, we're going to.
The real problem, let's talk about that for just a minute. It is a problem, and there are people who want us to go yet on another round, but let's talk about where we are.
Okay.
What day are we now? 60-something. 66th day. And you hear, you know, there's some big issues yet to be resolved, but there's always this nagging feeling that it's just going to topple and these things are going to happen and we're going to be out of here. This has one more place to go, and that's Finance Committee in both houses. I suspect that Bill's going to have an easier time in his body than mine, perhaps, in getting this legislation through, if there's good support out there. It's just, I think, perhaps a realistic statement. Bill Parker and I are chair of Community and Region Affairs and cared enough to spend an awful lot of our time in the last year. I worry if this legislation doesn't pass this year as to who's going to carry it forward, should this legislation pass, and if it should pass, how are we going to help it pass? You know, I think we just have to throw that, in a sense, out to you and some others. Well, no, we'll be in office, but, you know, we're probably going to straighten out the nether world. I don't know, they probably want to put me in some place and...
I think it's what they got in mind for me, too.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly why the voluntary thing, again, is so important, because even though it's clearly your intention that it be that way, we don't know how the legislature will be organized next session. And again, they're not bound by it. They're having it there as just one other peg that we'd like to see.
Well, this gets to the regulatory process. You can't get rid of regulations by joint resolution anymore.
Well, they're only for annulling now. The other's a big question mark. But I noticed when some power authority things came through, they were talking about we're not going to do it by statute. So I think that word's out there. Right.
Another issue, now I'll be honest with you, I have not read all of what Title 29 is.
I tell you, if you had, I'd be amazed.
Well,
it'll put
today.
You to sleep like that.
The plot's a little weak.
Waiting for the movie to come out.
That's right.
From what I've heard in the conversation, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with, let's assume this place became a borough. 6 months from now, a year, they decided, hey, this isn't for us. How difficult it would be for them to say, we want out.
There is a mechanism to dissolve. I will not kid you that that it might be easy, because whenever you create something, you know, people get into it, usually have to get a lot of emotion going to get the thing in the first place, you know. And I think an example, and I don't know the politics of it, but the Fort Yukon, although they've done a study and so on,
people are commenting that sure is one way.
You know, they haven't moved to that next step. So whenever you make a commitment to something, there are some people who are going to stay with it, and maybe somebody else will change. All I can say is there's a mechanism within the law to do it.
Is that what Haines is going through?
Haines is a third-class borough. It's very kind of a strange creature and pretty limited in power. And there are people who feel it's just not working, and so there's dissension in the community about what it should be. For instance, they have just had a coastal management, coastal district plan done. But the third class borough has no planning powers. It could do it on a service basis, but they're not doing it. So they could only plan for the little part of City of Haines, and that was kind of frustrating because you've got all this area that's affected, but it couldn't be in. So there's a lot of people up there not very happy with the third class borough, but they have an option to have elections and change that if they want to.
So in this 580, we should see a light of option possible.
I don't think I understand that. Oh.
She means that she would like to see an option written in there to get out if you choose to be.
It's already in the law, though. That's in the law. You have to look at the total law. This amends the existing law. So that's there. You know, we could show you what section that is. But
okay.
So this just becomes a part of the whole thing. The committee's been quiet here. I wonder if they have any comments or questions. It's been a long day. Pat?
Well, for whatever it's worth, I'd like to throw out another comment that I'm sure you're not going to like to hear. But there are other, you know, I understand your concern about being forced into some kind of government. Just so that you realize maybe partly, at least in part where some of this comes from, is that there are other parts of the state that say, hey, we see, you know, the more rural areas always coming in with their hand out, but not accepting any of the responsibility. And that's a, I don't know, it's probably a legitimate concern on some of the other regions of the state. And I you know, I throw that out just so that you realize partly where, not only, I don't want to speak for this committee, where it's coming from, but there are other political forces in effect which are trying to say, hey, let's get those people to pick up part of their own responsibility. At the same time, you're saying, hey, now, wait a minute, let's not rush into this.
Well, I think for the educational basis, we're saying don't rush into it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Give people in the community time to help and educate those other individuals.
Yeah.
Agencies are just getting developed. Development corporations are just getting on their feet. Native corporations are just this year getting on their feet. Give us a chance to do some education out there before implementing this sort of procedure.
One of the things that I think we noticed when we went out, we would go into a hub community, and they were not too hepped on having a borough. But as we went into the areas that traded into that hub, they were saying, well, we can see all the services flowing into the hub, but they're not coming to us. How do we get our part? And I think this is a very real frustration with the smaller villages, which are, after all, providing a lot of the financial basis for the hub cities. And I think there's more interest in those areas because they know they're not getting the services.
Jeff, you had a comment.
Yeah, I think that we're kind of hung up on one area, and that's mandatory boroughs.
Yeah.
And I just want to stress that, at least in my opinion, the importance of 580 is it recognizes a very important aspect, and that is planning by the local entity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking a three-year planning program that provides probably the maximum flexibility. And, you know, I really think that I would hate to see us get away from that. I really think that 580 is a good piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now in our second year of planning in a comprehensive approach. And it is really helping.
Is it?
It really is. And the people in the communities now are taking a look at these different projects. And, you know, you know, the other areas of the state are always saying, you know, hey, these guys are coming in with their hands up, you know. And they really haven't come up with any way to decide if that's really what they need or really what they want. And now they're really doing it. As an example, I mean, I don't want to get too far off base, but Public Health Service has been involved in installing water and sewer systems in many of the communities of the state. And many of the communities have significant problems with maintenance and operation of these. Okay. So Selwig is planning a new water and sewer system. Through the regional strategy mechanism, we bought in Public Health Service before the planning process began. And we sat down with them and we said, work with us on a system that we can afford, that meets our needs, but that 2, 3, and 4 years from now, we can afford the monthly maintenance charges, and it worked.
Jeff, that shouldn't be a miracle, but it is, because, you know, the few places we got this summer, you know, the heat loops, the question of the system that can't be maintained, just a whole host of problems. And there are a few places we saw the sewer pipe on the ground yet to be installed, but it should never be, or the community facility that they can't operate because of the energy situation. So, you know, I mean, that's really encouraging news, if there's even that spin-off.
You brought up the concept of the hub concept of things not going on, and the hub depending on all the spokes that are around. And you hear this comment of the real people always coming in with their hands out. If you really study the economy of the state, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau being basic hubs, they're dependent on those rural areas also for their own survival. So the idea of everything going out and not coming back, anything that goes out there comes back through time.
Yeah, I think though that we have to find ways to communicate so we don't get them and us, you know. And gosh, we had one up in Anchorage last week that really shook me up, and it's on the Alaska Hospital, and the way it was handled, it got into, in a public forum, them and us, and because we hadn't brought people along together, and that's, you know, that's the reality you deal with 60 people down here.
Anchorage had really studied the situation and realized the Native community had already planned it would be an open facility. So it would cost the community of Anchorage half as much to operate because it would have all those federal dollars as well.
Well, but that, you see, that was getting into the system, you see, the whole thing.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
put your hand
yeah.
out and the feds are going to put some money in.
Yeah.
Well, the people
yeah.
in the rural areas want to get away from that. Yeah. You know, it's a real, real thing. Without an economic base, there's no way that they're going to
be. Yeah. Well, is there anything else? I'm really delighted at the work you did, because it sounds like a lot of your concerns have been addressed, and we just have to see what, you know, if there's a little more.
We took specific positions on the other bills in the package, if those are of interest.
How did you do on 585?
Which one?
The second class borough to adding the allowing for, what was it?
Season.
Yeah, we said that's fine. It appears inevitable. We have no problem.
No, that's the second class to home rule. Is that? Are you talking about the same thing?
Right, it's in Senate rules now.
Yeah.
We view it as virtually inevitable and no real problem with it. Although one concern was that maybe that could have been some leverage to bring this package along, if it could have somehow been tied to the package.
I don't know if there's any way to bring this package along. There's a key sitting in the back room there, and the gentleman he works for. You bring him along. No, you bring him along, and you got a package. Okay. No, I think that. Mike, do you care to introduce yourself, or do you want to be?
Well, I've met most of the
time. Why don't you?
Mike Scott. I work for Senator Ferguson, but really, I'm just.
Oh no, I haven't discussed the package with Senator Ferguson, but
no,
I think that
as far as where he stands, you know, it's kind of that point at all. We're not that far along. The committee still is doing its work, and
mm-hmm.
I think what's being brought out here is helpful to the committee, because I know you did travel the rural areas,
mm-hmm.
and I think these people do represent the rural
sure.
areas and give you that added input that you need, since mm-hmm. you have been back here. You've heard a lot of other.
But I do think that the rural legislators, representative of rural Alaska, Senator Homan, Senator Ferguson, Senator Sackett, Senator McKay in the Senate, and in the House, you've got two times that number, and I think that's very important that they feel like there's a solution here. And can't say that too strongly.
We have a situation where just a couple weeks ago, we have a water facility where people go. And
where are you from, Jenny?
Fort Yukon.
Oh, we had a good visit. Your community. Okay. Sure, you were there. Right, now I'm just here bothering me. Where? Okay, sorry.
Oh, where? Get rid of it quick. Anyway, the water.
Oh, no, I want to come back.
The Waterhouse had a situation where the pressure gave way, and they had thousands of gallons that overflowed into the water line to the point where we had to close the school down, and there was pollution in our town. People were sick. Okay. An old water well had to be opened up in an old AC store so people could get water. Okay, it was very cold, big mess. But the end result is, this was put in years ago. It was planned by whoever. Today we're trying to find out whoever, where are you? Come in and take care of the problem. We don't have this. And these are things that make people apprehensive to get involved with more state things like that. And the school is picking up the expense currently just to keep the town moving.
Gee, that's rough.
It's very rough.
You better be.
If we can't solve a little water problem, I mean, this rural business is really gigantic, right?
Well, like, any other comments?
I'd like to thank the committee for their efforts. They spent an announcement this fall. So I think it's the first time that the state's done a real major effort in public hearing about the issue that really doesn't matter.
Well, appreciate that. I tell you, it's tremendous learning for all of us. Bob?
We're going to have a problem in presenting these, in testifying tomorrow from the Senate side because of the plenary session and the luncheon is at the same time.
We had to, because of that, and I knew you couldn't be there. I've got a quorum problem because Senator McKay, and I didn't want to discuss these bills without him, has to be at a permanent fund meeting. So I'm going to cancel the meeting tomorrow. So we'll be okay. And we'll, I'll pass along this comment. And you'll be coming out with a written statement too,
right,
won't you? So I'll see that gets to the committee meeting.
Just very briefly, the one recommendation that didn't fit into any particular bill, but which was felt very strongly by the workshop, was that the state should recognize a new class of cities, which would be those that qualify as IRA councils or traditional councils. It's something that was brought up in the interim committee worksheet, but not dealt with in any piece of legislation. This would assist in the problem of having small communities talk to through the regional hubs or sub-regional hubs. If the state recognized that their form of local government is legitimate, there'd be a lot more likelihood that they'd be listened to as legitimate.
Let me throw out one other thing for you. Well, Senator McKay was very concerned about this $25,000 that we're recommending, to the smaller communities. In the sense that he felt there should be that it could go to something to go to those areas, such as the IRAs and the traditional councils, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We met with Community and Region Affairs, and I don't know if they've been able to do. Palmer, were you at that meeting? I've got a problem. We met with Bob Jenks and Commissioner McInerney to see if there are any alternatives we can pursue now, whether it would be an increase in grant funds or something made available. But it's an ongoing problem, and I don't have an easy answer to it. Palmer?
Last week we got a legal assistance grant request from the city of Sexton that basically wanted to see if they could merge their city council. They are second class city in the IRA council. It's something that we've been discussing with staff of Tanawha Chiefs mutual concern. I think there's been the notion that we're approaching that problem in different directions, but the outcome of it all is, and Spud and Chris are here, and this is something I should talk with them before. And we're going to actually take the Saxman request, which does raise that issue, hopefully enter into a contract with Tanawha Chiefs providing legal assistance grant money, since there's more IRA councils in that area, and see if we can't at least get some legal research done. I know they've got staff that have done a lot of work on that whole question of how could we get the state to recognize as third-class cities, otherwise known as villages or something else, and some sort of state recognition of the IRA and or traditional councils. And I'm going to see what the result's going to be. That's the purpose of the legal research on it.
Spud, that answers a little bit your question that we really haven't answered, and that's that intermediary step. You know, in a way, we're prejudging that there's only one solution, and that's boroughs, because it's an evolving kind of thing, and I guess my concern is that we get started on something. And I hadn't heard about that, but that, you know.
Well, in territorial days, there was no problem.
Yeah.
Every community was recognized as an entity of the state.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got a bunch of orphans out there.
And who have the same needs and people and all the rest.
And
yeah.
Even a lot of the organized communities are organized in name only.
Mm-hmm.
No,
well,
not,
and
not
that gets,
as
sure, because that gets down, you know, what's rural government at CETA and no longer CETA, and it's just going to happen, and it's, you know, it's a,
right.
It's critical, and that whole question of resource or distribution is a problem.
We run a lot of programs where communities were ineligible unless they're organized.
Yeah.
And that's been happening for quite a few years, and they were forced to organize it. Just a matter of they just change patterns.
Yeah, and it doesn't really solve the basic problems. Yeah.
What's happening with that revenue sharing, that $25,000 revenue sharing right now?
Well, in the Senate, it's kind of waiting to talk a little bit more to Community and Regional Affairs. As I say, Senator McKay has a concern about that.
Well, our recommendation is
$50,000.
Now, let me tell you this.
Listen, that $25,000 was proposed in 74, and this is 1980.
Well, let's be a little realistic.
Realistic.
I do seriously want to tell you what's happening, though. I just talked to Representative Gardner today, and House Bill 192 has been supported. It's a revenue-sharing bill, quite a different concept than the categorical grant. He indicated that he hopes to see it taken up in House Finance next week. And that does carry in it basically the same thing as the, you know, the bill that we proposed. And that will, when it comes through, will probably end up at the Senate committee and so on. And it may be the best way for it to go through would be as part of a package, but even if you put it out of committee, it would go to finance, and I think it would, let's say it did in House or Senate, and I suspect it would only be acted upon as a part of however revenue sharing is handled, you know, the broader question of revenue sharing. I doubt it would be taken up by itself. Maybe I'm wrong on that one, Bill. I'm never wrong.
Never
right, for sure.
Following on that, the one other recommendation was that IRA councils and traditional councils where they don't duplicate a second class city would be eligible for that revenue sharing supplement.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
At whatever amount. We recommended 50, but if 25 is approved, that be expanded to cover IRA councils or traditional councils as well as the second class city, but not to provide any sort of double payment.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Any last comments, Jeff?
Yes, Madam Chair, with the permission of the committee, there is a bill that was introduced on the Senate side by Senator Holman from Bethel. And although we realize that that's not being considered here, we did take a look at that
mm-hmm.
piece of legislation.
You like it?
And we would like to make a comment on that.
Yeah, what's the number on that?
488.
488. Incidentally, I'm having... you have a face that just tells a whole story. Isn't that fun? we're having a sectional analysis done of that bill. Would you go ahead and make comment on that?
Okay. Senate Bill 488 in its present form does not meet the needs or the concerns of the unorganized borough. The question is not one of organizing as a home rural or unified borough, but is a question of establishing a planning strategy to be developed and implemented at the local level. This planning process will be able to address the problems being experienced by the unorganized borough. With this in mind, we feel the changes that we are recommending to House Bill or to committee substitute for House Bill 580 is the best way that we can have the people involved in determining the type of government that is the most appropriate to their area.
Well, may I ask, Jeff, will you be making a statement on that tomorrow?
Yes, we will.
You will be considering. trying to think if there's anything else affecting local government idols. Do you have any major bills?
None.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate this, and I'll stick around, or the others will if there's anything further you want to add. Thank you. I appreciate that.